HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Laura Ryan. Laura is Director of International HR at Dropbox. Laura's been instrumental in Dropbox's design of their new ways of working, which is primarily a remote working model. We're going to dig into that now in one second. Laura, you're very welcome.
Hi, Declan. Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
Great to have you on. Laura, two things before we get into your significant work around Dropbox's remote strategy. Maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself. And I know what Dropbox is. I've used it in the past. Maybe you could just give a little outline as to what Dropbox does as well.
Yeah, sure. So I'll do myself first. We can get that out of the way and then we can talk business. So who am I and what am I about? So Laura Ryan, I went to college in Galway. I did a very general degree. I had no idea what I wanted to do. Like most people, stumbled into HR. But boy, am I glad that I did. I absolutely adore what I do. And I feel very fortunate to work in HR. I did most of my craft kind of growing and knowledge gathering with Aviva, where I spent over 7 years in a variety of HR roles. But that was just an amazing company to really hone and learn a whole variety of core kind of HR disciplines and just grow a really kind of strong knowledge base. I then had the amazing opportunity to move to Google, where they were really only starting to scale at Dublin at the time. So we're talking about 2010, and I joined them to help set up the geo map. So if you can imagine a world, Declan, where Street View was only kind of coming on stream, we didn't have local business listings with Google, and we were only kind of drawing out kind of the map, the Google Maps. We were just kind of building out that whole project. So I spent 3 years pretty much on a greenfield site with them, building that up from like zero to close to 400 employees on that particular project. And then I moved in to work with some of the sales organizations and customer experience teams into Google's main office in Barrow Street. I had a most wonderful time there. And then I had an opportunity to join Dropbox and head up their EMEA team originally. And then the role has increased from it to an international perspective. So I really didn't anticipate leaving Google because I loved it so much. But this was just something, I think it just spoke to me. There was just a much smaller organization, great opportunity. And I've spent the last 5 years then at Dropbox building out the team and the overall kind of people strategy for international. And it's been quite the ride. So that's a very, very quick overview of who I am and what I do.
That's perfect.
I have, personally, I'm married to Martin. We have 3 children. I have 6, 4, and 2. And recently, as in last week, we moved from Dublin to Tipperary. And so this is my first week working from Tipperary and dropping the kids to their new schools. And we're all kind of familiarizing our new rural life. And it's been wonderful, actually. So that's it. That's wow. Me in the summer. Yeah.
Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
Massive changes obviously for you and very much fits in with that remote working model we'll talk about. As I said, just for the benefit of people who don't maybe utilize Dropbox or haven't used it before, maybe just give us an overview as to what Dropbox do.
Totally. So I think a lot of people might know it as a little box that comes on phones or as a cloud storage company that just stores pictures. But really today, Dropbox has evolved and it provides, you know, tools to help distributed teams prioritize, get organized and just keep work moving safely from anywhere. So it's really around collaboration tools for distributed work. I think, you know, we'll talk about this as we get into virtual first, but this has been a really interesting year for our organization. Because our mission is to enable organizations and collaboration in the cloud. And it's really about enabling people to work in a much more focused and organized way. So if you think about this year and the clutter that technology brings and the noise that it brings, you know, we're getting more pings, instant notifications, messages. It's just nonstop. The technology is just constantly talking to us. Dropbox's aim is to bring that together in one place. So you have it all in one place, one tool, so that you can kind of declutter the noise from technology. So that's kind of, you know, very, very high level what we do at Dropbox. So it's definitely more than a storage folder for pictures.
Very good. And just in terms of our current situation, has that been commercially a good thing then for the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially, you know, as an organization, we didn't want to, you know, monopolize, or, you know, we wanted to be very thoughtful about how you, you know, the world is in crisis. Like, do you just run in and seize an opportunity to make money? Not at all, right? So our initial priorities were around caring for our current customers. You know, some of them had signed up to different, you know, various different product offerings, but didn't know how to use them properly. So our primary focus for the first 3 months was just enabling our current customer base. But, you know, I think as the year has gone on and more teams are becoming distributed, there have been upsides from a business perspective, for sure.
Laura, in my intro about you there, I said you had been instrumental in the design of Dropbox's new ways of working. You're terming it, I believe, virtual first. What is virtual first?
Yeah. So it is a pretty bold step, because it's unlike a hybrid model. Like, a hybrid model being a mix of remote work and office work, virtual first means that remote work will be the primary experience for all employees. So all solo or individual work. So, for example, our conversation now is done outside of a, it's done in my home. It's done outside of a traditional space, but all, you know, standard operational one-to-one meetings would not take place in a traditional office. We're repurposing our offices and designing what we're calling studios. So the idea of the studios are being designed to be collaborative spaces for team meetings or large group events. And I think for us, when we were designing this model, we wanted our teams to have a distributed remote experience as the default, but we also wanted to retain the human in-person element to work, which is so important, specifically around culture and community and teamwork. So we feel that we have tried to harness the best of both worlds, essentially. And it's very intentional in terms of how and why you would use a studio, for example. We did, interesting, so there will be no desks or no individual workstations in our studios. And some of our employees were like, I'm sorry, I don't understand what's going on here. Why would you not give us a desk? Or why can we not hot desk in a studio? And so as you get into it, it becomes more and more apparent why. So by doing that, you run the risk of having very, very distinct employee experiences. So Declan, if you decide that you want to be in a studio 4 days a week because you want a hot desk there, then effectively you're getting back into that hybrid model space, which is where, as an employee, you get to decide how you come in, when you come in and how often you come into an office space. For us, though, we did not want to have different experiences for our employees. We wanted to ensure that there was like a level playing field for all our employee base, that everyone had kind of equal opportunities around kind of inclusion and equality. Because what we had found when we did some research is that some of the hybrid models or organizations, they're grappling with things like that. So, you know, human nature I think we're not designed to be impartial. We're just not, as humans. It's impossible. So if I'm in my manager has a preference for, you know, me to be in 5 days a week and they're in 5 days a week and you're at home 5 days a week, there may be some unintentional biases that come into things like career progression or promotion prospects, yeah, or just performance management. And
it's
so
the whole proximity bias, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And those kind of traditional micromanagement kind of, or those ideas of, you know, you often hear that person's really hard worker, they're in first in, last home. And you're like, are they the hardest worker on the team, or do they just appear to be the hardest worker on the team? So it's hard to move away in some cases from that traditional mindset, because we've all been hardwired into thinking like that. So we believe this model helps by doing that, by helping kind of shift. And it is a shift. But helping kind of shift away from those traditional mindsets.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's just culturally built into us all, hardwired, as you said, Laura. It's just so in us all now to behave in certain ways. So it's interesting always to challenge that established norm. And couple of things you mentioned there. It's going to be for collaboration. It's going to be for sort of, I think you said, large team events. I know you've an intention around community building within teams or within the organization. What will fit the parameters of those things? What will be, you know, acceptable usage of the studio?
Yeah, we will leave that up to teams. Like, we're not the type of organization that will micromanage that. But we, our guidelines and our guardrails are, it has to be, you know, some form of team collaboration outside of your regular, you know, team meeting on a weekly basis that covers your business as usual activities. So anything cross-functional, any kind of learning and development opportunities, like we do a lot of work in social impact work in our communities. And so you might bring your team together to do some, I don't know, some brainstorming or planning for the next few weeks or the next quarter, and then do a social impact thing and have a lunch or whatever. So it's not the day to day. Anything that's non kind of day to day business as usual work, as I said. But we don't have, and we don't intend to put strict parameters around that, because again, it comes back to the culture, right? And we trust our leaders and managers and employees to use their own judgment and discretion about what they feel is appropriate and why they would need to be in a studio. I think the other important aspect of this model is that you get to decide where and how you want to work. So we understand that a lot of people don't have the physical space to have a home office, or, you know, there's people crouched down in bedrooms all over the country, or, you know, in makeshift offices. And so we are offering our employees a perks allowance so that they can actually use that to buy a WeWork membership pass, for example, and so people can decide, well, I might be in a studio, a Dropbox studio on Friday. I might get to, you know, I might decide to go to a WeWork space 2 or 3 days a week and then work from home 1 day a week, or work from anywhere, frankly, 1 day a week. So there's a complete flexibility in that model. So we hope by affording people and financially supporting people with the perks allowance that there will not be this constant drive to want to go into the studio, and that people will kind of find their way with it once we have a studio up and running and once it's safe to return into a working environment in that way.
Yeah, Laura, you beat me to my next question there. I was just about to ask you about the, I mean, look, we all know we have people who work with us or within our teams who do exactly as you described there. They might be working at home from a bedroom, or they might be with a partner at home in a one bed, you know, apartment or something like that. So it's an interesting approach. You're also going to allow a lot more flexibility, I believe, in terms of location, including allowing people work from locations that maybe don't have a Dropbox office.
Yeah, so as it stands, we're not planning on opening any new entities. So our offices where we currently have office spaces across Europe, we will be repurposing those into studios. But you don't have to live in the city or the hub. So we're seeing a lot of people move, you know, out of Paris, for example, down to the south of France, or, you know, a couple of our employees in Germany have decided to move out of Munich and Hamburg, which is where we have our hubs. And so we are seeing, and I'm another example of moving out of Dublin. So
I was just about to say,
so we are seeing people move back to either hometowns or move out of kind of the cities where, you know, rental income and our rental properties and house prices tend to be more expensive, and just the cost of living tends to be higher. So we're definitely seeing that type of movement. But, you know, it's a flexible, I would say, Declan, it's a very flexible but targeted approach. Like, our intention is not to just set up employment entities anywhere that we don't currently operate.
Yeah, I totally get you. I know there's various tax and legal implications, obviously, if you start allowing people just go to anywhere they choose to do so. So a practical but still very, very attractive approach for your employees in terms of...
I think so, yeah. I mean, we have said, and people have said to us, you know, we have a lot of employees that are based in Dublin that are not from Ireland or not from Dublin. And they've said things like, I'd love to be able to go to Spain, for example. We don't have an employment entity in Spain for the summer. And we're like, yeah, once you don't exceed the allowance that's, you know, within guidelines from a revenue perspective and within your own country, and we don't incur any kind of issues from a taxation perspective, of course you can. Of course you can go for within, I think it's like 180, don't quote me, but you know, there's a certain number of days.
Yeah.
Once you're within those allowances, and we would take our advice from the tax consultants around that, of course you can go and work for 3 months. So they're the really kind of, that's what we like, they're so flexible. I might even head down to the south of France myself. I won't, I don't know where to go. I don't have a property there, but I mean, the idea of being able to just pack up and work from anywhere and still have a meaningful career, but just experience different cultures or environments at different stages. I think that's just wonderful. And it's something that's never been available to people in the past.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I think if you stay within the EU, you'll be okay there, Laura, for,
yeah,
for
us. So
we're all good. The South of France is all good. You're an international or you're a global organization. You've people in various different time zones. How are you going to handle, it's probably, or it is an existing problem, but how are you going to handle, you know, collaboration across regions? Anything around, you know, what, when people will work or anything like that? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so as part of Virtual First, we have looked at this concept of non-linear working days, but also core collaboration hours. So again, it's really around giving people the choice and freedom and flexibility to work in the in a way that suits them. So a core collaboration hours, for example, in Europe, we might say that's 9 to 1. And that's the period in the day that all synchronous collaboration would be done. So you would be, that's when you might decide that you would have all team meetings, like our EMEA town halls, and all hands would be done within that period. And then there's a chunk of your day from say 1 until 4 that is completely asynchronous. You do not need to be available for meetings. You can go to the gym, you know, take the Pilates class, go for the walk, do whatever you need to do, pick up the kids from school, do your home, whatever it is that you have that time to either collaborate with your colleagues in an asynchronous way through our tools and our platforms. So you can focus on deep things, or you also have the freedom and flexibility to blend and do other things in your life. And then, of course, you know, we are a global organization, so there is a requirement that, you know, for many of us that we have to collaborate with people in different time zones. But we would do that within their core collaboration area. So some of us have to go back online maybe from a 4 to 6 period in the evening or a little bit later. So in my case, I tend to not want to work from, not want to, I tend to want to spend a little bit of time, family time in the evenings, and I can take a chunk of time off and then go back online later on in the evening that suits me. So again, it's moving away from this traditional 9 to 5 mindset and being able to, you know, have a very kind of a very different experience throughout your day. So for me, for example, it does mean that I get to do homework with the kids in the middle of the afternoon. On Monday, I brought them swimming. Now I do work a little bit later when they go to bed, but that's okay. That suits me. I don't, you know, want to sit down and watch Netflix, because I get to do the things. I can watch Netflix at the weekend, but during the week, I get to do the things that are meaningful for me, which is spend that time with the kids. And then I still get to catch up and work, and I have the freedom and the autonomy and the flexibility to do that. It's not for everyone. Like, you know, some people just, they want to have that kind of clear boundaries and delineation between work and personal. And so I understand that. But it feels like it is the way a lot of people are trending towards and want to work in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it's got to be fluid and has to suit the individual's needs. What are you guys doing in terms of, I know a lot of what you do is probably quite knowledge based, but how are you, have you always been an organization where the output was more important than the, you know, like we described earlier, is that that person works really hard, they're here 12 hours a day, but, you know, or what are they getting done? How are you guys handling that in terms of, say, objectives or things like that? Or have you always been more output focused as opposed to presenteeism?
Declan, we had, like, since I've been there over the last 5 years, and my understanding is since the inception of Dropbox, we have very much been output focused. So even, you know, I get asked all the time, has your absence gone up during this period of time? Don't really know, because we don't measure it. We measure output, we measure impact, we measure deadlines, you know, and so we don't look at things like that. We don't look at people's hours online, you know, has productivity dropped? I don't know if an individual's productivity has dropped. We know if we miss a deadline, if we miss a target, if we're not shipping products, if we're not building good products. So we really don't focus on those things, unless, you know, there is individual circumstances for us to go deeper on those. But as an organization, and our HR philosophy is really all around impact and output, and we don't measure the inputs in a very micro kind of way.
What's been the reaction from employees in general? And has there been any insights in terms of regionally? It is a global strategy. Yeah. Has it been picked up on differently in different areas?
Yeah, it's a great question. The reaction has been, I would say, neutral to positive. And I would say that because, you know, two things. One, we've been both fortunate and unfortunate with the timing. Fortunate in that we managed to do this, you know, in a very kind of tight time frame, because we were in a, you know, a large world experiment in remote working, which enabled us to shift this pretty quickly. But I think we can't actually live a virtual first reality right now, because we don't have access to our studios. We're all working from home. We're not experiencing the flexibility of being able to, you know, go meet colleagues for coffee and bring our laptops and sit in a coffee shop and have a meeting, or cycle over to a friend's house and work there for half a day, or go into a WeWork space. So the actual essence and the flexibility of how a virtual first model and how we've designed our virtual first model is actually not available to people. So, and that's why I would say a lot of people are on the fence, because I keep talking about, hey, but you can work whatever way you want. And like, this is the most empowering message. Like, the organization is trusting you. You never have to feel the pressure to be somewhere and to be present. And that's such a powerful message. And I think that may be lost, that sentiment is lost, because we've never worked that way before. And people are really curious about it, but also it's just new. It's new to us. And we've launched it and we're in it, but we're all still in lockdowns and some form of lockdowns across the globe. So that's why, I mean, we've been fortunate and unfortunate with the timing, because we can't fully embrace the model. I think some of our teams, like our engineering teams and our sales teams, have been hugely positive about it, because for them, they feel that you can credibly now go and talk about distributed work because you're a distributed team. So that kind of alignment to our mission and the mission of the organization, when you are actually working in a distributed way, ultimately will mean that you can talk more knowledgeably about the products. And that from an engineering perspective, when you're living and breathing in a, you know, in a distributed model, you're ultimately going to build better products and understand the products a little bit more. So that's kind of you know, from a team perspective. Regionally, has been interesting. So I expected kind of highly densely populated, like cities, like our London team or our Paris team or our Tokyo team, for example, to have a little bit of, you know, pushback or some hesitation around it, because we tend to have a lot of our employees in those spaces living in smaller apartments, particularly in Tokyo. But actually, because of how we've designed it and providing financial support and assistance for people to, if they wish, to use a WeWork space or any type of community-based office space, I think that has kind of helped alleviate some of the concerns about having the right physical environment set up for people. So I kind of, as I said, a lot of people on the fence. So it's neutral to positive, purely because it's so new and we're not in it. And, you know, it's not for everyone, right? So it suits a lot of people it suits a lot of people like me and my demographic. I think if I was a new grad coming out of college and this was my first job, I'm not sure that it may not suit me, right? Because, you know, the in-office experience that a new grad gets is hugely important. Like, your social interaction, all of that, it comes from there. And so we hope that we can, when we start to get into our studios, that we can, you know, this is going to be an iterative process. We're going to continue to evaluate and evolve. And we really want to be an attractive proposition for all demographics of people in the market. We hope that the use of our studios and how we do that and the autonomy and the flexibility will overall provide an attractive proposition to all demographics. But we don't know at this point.
Yeah, no, I totally take your point. We're not, we don't currently have the freedoms to allow it be rolled out fully effectively in terms of people's freedom to move, etc. You touched on it in a graduate context there, Laura, but I'm interested in it in general. In terms of people's experiences in terms of people's learning on the job. For me, I feel that's a bit of a hole that none of us have cracked in terms of, you know, you won't be observing people as they go about their business in the office as much. You won't just casually bump into people as much. Now you can create those contacts or those collisions as you go. But the bit I really fear that people will miss is just the observation of, you'll see how Laura acts in a particular meeting or in a particular interaction and stuff. And thoughts around that in general, not necessarily just for Dropbox.
Yeah, I think, it is a challenge. And this is why I think the studio, the use of our studios will be so important for us, so that people do still have that, you know, human connection, and they do get to observe those behaviours. And we're not we think that people will use the studios on average once a week, but we're not limiting it for people. So if, you know, we have a new grad population that comes in, and we want to have like learning and development and immersive experiences there, then there may be opportunities for those people to be part of that and come into the studio for more. So, you know, all of this is to say, Declan, do we have answers to it in a virtual only or remote only world? No, like there are a ton of tools that you can use. They're all still new to some degree, like, but we're exploring a whole host of whiteboarding, online whiteboarding tools. But it is hard to completely replicate the human experience, like the in-office experience, which is why we have tried to retain it, actually, because we don't have the solution. I think we have set this up, and how we've positioned it with our teams is that, you know, this is going to be, we're on a learning curve. We've made a very bold statement in relation to what the model is and kind of laid down our marker in terms of what we were trying to achieve. But we are very much going into this with a learning mindset. We do not have all the answers, and we're asking all of our employees to come on this kind of learning journey with us and hold curiosity. So we don't have all the answers. We certainly don't have everything figured out. But we hope that, you know, in the next year, like if I was to talk to you this time 12 months, we might be so much further down the road. And then I might be able to answer that question with a whole host more knowledge and confidence in our ability to do that. So as it stands right now, we're like everyone else, actually. We're just trying to figure it out as we go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one that for all of us, I think, to try and crack. In terms of engagement in general, do Dropbox currently measure employee engagement in any particular way? And as you move to this virtual first model, will you continue to measure it in the same way and you know, track the trends and look at that as an impact?
Yeah, absolutely. So we used to do quarterly kind of pulse surveys, and we felt that was too frequent. And so now we do them twice a year. So we do them in Q2 and Q4. And so we recently had one in November, and then we had one back in May. So hugely important. And, you know, it's quite an extensive survey that we do. And we will continue to measure them, and we will continue that cadence. I think we will obviously adjust and shift some of the questions around a virtual first world, and continue to make sure that we're getting a pulse of how people are feeling about it. And we use that feedback all of the time to inform our strategy. So, for example, you know, 2 months into our mandatory work from home as a result of the pandemic, we surveyed people to understand how they were feeling, what their preferences were about a return to the office. And so many people had said they wanted, you know, it was like overwhelming, 80% wanted to continue working in a remote way. And so that kind of informed some of our thinking. So we use that data to really help us make critical decisions, because it is so important to us that we understand what the employee sentiment is. We have a very open culture. I think where feedback is critical. Like, I know a lot of organizations say that, Declan, but we actually, because we're a relatively small organization, it is really, really critical for us.
Yeah, just keep you in touch with that pulse of the people. I was just going to ask you a really, really tactical thing. I mean, this is obviously a global strategy, Laura, and I totally get it. I am presuming Dropbox has some sort of customer service department that if I have a problem with my Dropbox product, I can contact them. I am sure that is either phone or web chat or email based. So for people in roles like that, where you need to keep a service up for certain periods of time, whether they're in a region or whether they're 24/7, how will a non-linear workday translate for people providing those sort of services, or is that just not possible?
I think there is parameters in which we provide for people, so to ensure, to your point, that there is coverage. So, and there's a general understanding when you're in certain parts of the organization, like those kind of frontline operations roles that are just business critical, like to the, you know, we do need people there to deal with our customers, and our teams understand that, but they still do get to avail of the flexibility outside of their core. So if, for example, you know, I know that I'm in my, let's call it my frontline support staff, I have my 9-to-3 shift. Within that, then after 3 o'clock, I can use that to do, you know, my passion projects or any other work that I need to do. And so there is flexibility, but there also is, it has to be structured, because, you know, at the end of the day, we do need to make sure that we have coverage for those things.
Yeah, no, real, really practical approach, as you say, just sort of covering those core errors and then utilizing all the good stuff around it as well. Final thing, Laura, and thank you so much for your time today. You're a leader, clearly, within your organization. How have you found it? What's your own personal experiences of remotely leading a team?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's been so mixed. I think the highlights have been truly connecting with the team. Like I knew my team. I really amazed and impressed at people's resilience and tenacity and just sheer grit to just get the job done and their passion. And so that has been remarkable. I'm incredibly proud, actually, of the team. And I think while it's been difficult not to have meetups in person, I do, and we had a team meeting just this morning, our last one before we break up for holidays, and everyone felt just uplifted in the fact that we are actually very close as a team and everyone feels like they know each other a little bit better. So there's been some real highlights. We also have reacted so well to the crisis. Like, you know, I think back to March when we naively said, guys, we're just going to shut the office for 2 weeks and we'll be fine. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Never thinking in a million years what was ahead. And I remember standing up in front of the site saying, you know, we think we're being overly cautious because we made a move early in March the 5th, but we really feel this is the right thing to do. You know, we have a moral and ethical responsibility to our communities. And you know, and people were saying, God, this is so over the top. And Dropbox is just, you know, I know they care about our safety, but this is ridiculous. And then within a week, most companies were kind of following suit. And I just think about how naive we were saying, we'll see you all in 2 weeks. But the team just reacted. They constantly evolved. So we had to onboard people remotely, change how we do all of those things, our hiring. And so there was an initial scramble for all of those things. Then we moved on to, you know, employees' mental health and their well-being and how do we sustain that and opening up conversations about all those really important topics. Then it was burnout and Zoom fatigue. And again, the HR team were on the front of all of this. So literally every month there was almost like a new topic or a new focus area or a new, you know, a new something emerged that needed attention. And all the while we were designing and kind of working on what our virtual first strategy is. So my team are just coming through this year, I think, tired, no doubt about it. There's a level of exhaustion and fatigue, and I hope everyone takes a long break. But also, I think there's a sense of pride about what you can accomplish together as a group. So I'm really happy with that. Personally, for me, it has been a year of, I think, reflection. And just a year of change. Like, you know, we made a decision to leave Dublin, as I said earlier. I've spent way more time with my family than I ever would before. And they were things that I never really knew were missing or that I didn't know were gaps in my life until I've had them this year. And honestly, I wouldn't change it for the world. I get to take my kids to school every day. I have dinner with them every evening. I'm not stuck on the M50 in traffic anymore, or on a Lewis crammed into someone's, you know, back, or backpacks crammed into my arm. And I'm just more at peace. And that for me is how I'm exiting this year, you know, personally, which is just this renewed sense of focus and what's really important. And I still get to have a great team and a meaningful career, but I'm also closer to my parents and family around us here.
On that exceptionally positive note, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really, really interesting hearing what you guys in Dropbox are doing, or in the process are doing. So well done on the strategy, and the very best of luck with it.
Thank you, Declan. And it was just great to be here, and lovely talking to you this morning.
Thanks, Laura.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.